Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Welcome to Processing, a show about the intersection of food and grief with your hosts, me, Zara Tangora, and my mother, Bobby, who is not here for the intro, but folks, fear not, as you know, will be here for the episode. And what an episode it is today, guys. We have a really great guest today on the show, a friend of ours, Adam Israelis. And Adam joins us to talk about multiple losses that he's had throughout his life, including an early loss of his father, a loss of a dear friend in a car accident, and the loss of his mother 7 years ago to pancreatic cancer. Adam is such a warm and lovely person, and it was such an easy conversation to have. And it was interesting, it was touching, it was emotional, and it was just a really, really rich conversation. And we loved speaking with Adam. We're so grateful to him. A couple things we didn't get to mention in the episode. We did briefly mention the Lost Garden Foundation, and that's a great organization that funds pancreatic cancer research. And then also we wanted to mention an organization to support. It's a nonprofit that was started on behalf of Adam's friend Steve, who passed away in an accident with Adam. And they fund scholarships at their high school, Harborfields High School in Long Island. The organization is mallymemorial.org. So it's www.mallymemorial.org. And they have a charity golf outing in June at Crab Meadow Golf Course. And please check that out. And incidentally, Crab Meadow Golf Course is down the street from where I grew up in Northport. As we will discuss in the episode, our Long Island roots. Folks, there's talk of Greek salad and more on this very Long Island episode and this very sweet and very touching episode of Processing. So we will give you, without any further ado, Adam Israelis, and don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and please reach out to us if you'd like to be a guest. Okay, thank you so much, and take care of yourselves and each other. Bye. Well, folks, we have an amazing episode today. It's our first episode with a guest back since our break began and then ended. And we are joined by friend Adam Israelis. Adam, hello.
Hi. How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Friend and actually Long Islander.
Yes. Yes. I grew up in Centerport, New York, sort of between Huntington and Northport. And so I think we were unbeknownst to me, we were neighbors growing up.
We must have passed each other 1,000 times.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Zara and I figured it out like over the summer, I think, when I was with my kids in Northport and posted it, and she was like, that's where I grew up. Mm-hmm. Which was shocking and interesting. Yeah.
I know. It's so awesome. Cause like being an Islander is one thing. And then when you're from the island, it's like kind of like, well, where are you from in Long Island? Because like there's, you know, little kind of regional differences within like Long Island in general. And it's
totally.
It was awesome to find out that we were from the same place.
Yeah. And I never tell people that I'm from Centerport because they don't know where that is. I tell them I'm from Huntington, and then some people are like, oh yeah, yeah, that's I like the downtown there. It's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
There
was a restaurant, which I don't know if you're, I'm sure you remember it, obviously, if you're from Centerport, but Mom, didn't you have your wedding dinner
Tong Ting, right? It was, no, what was it?
Tong Ting.
Right.
I have so many great memories from Tong Ting. We used to go there for Chinese New Year because they did like this whole, they brought out everything. They did like the traditional dragon dances and stuff like that. And my dad was not like a giant fan of eating out. We went to a few places, but Tong Ting was one of them. And I have like such great memories. There was a piano player.
Yes, right.
They had this amazing aquarium.
Right. The fish
and now
tank.
It's gone. They knocked it down. It's like it didn't even turn into something else. They knocked it down
and they put an eagle's nest there instead.
Yes, there are eagles that go there.
There's a little motel around the Chalet Motor Inn. But mm-hmm. the Tung Ting is gone, which is very sad to me. I heard that there used to be like a very famous restaurant there before Tung Ting, like a steakhouse or something like that.
It was
but I don't know if that's actually true.
It was further up the street. What that used to be was a catering hall, and was actually where I was married in 1971.
No way.
Yeah.
Where Tung Ting was?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. See, I had no idea.
Yeah. But you're thinking of, I can't think of the name now, but it was a very well-known in the 50s and 60s.
Got it.
The families went.
Link's Log Cabin.
There you go, Zara. That's it.
Ah, see, I have to ask Mr. My stepfather has lived in Centerport for probably, at this point, 50-plus years. Mm. So he moved there I don't know about the 50s, but I think the 60s or 70s. So I'll have to ask him about that.
That's amazing. I'm glad we share this.
Yeah. You can tell we love our hometown.
Yeah.
We do. Yeah, I do.
Yes.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you're talking about Tung Ting is that, you know, it's fun to remember this, like, oh, they had a piano player and, like, you know, the adults would smoke cigarettes at the bar where the kids drank Shirley Temples and stuff. And it's like so fun remembering it. But also it's like, I always think this about restaurants and like food in general is that it also serves as like these trail markers in time. You know what I mean? Because maybe you forget like what you did on an average Tuesday when you were 9 years old, but you might be like, oh, I remember Tung Ting. And then I remember being nine. And I remember how I felt when I was nine. And it's like these wonderful kind of markers in time. I think, you know, of course, different things can serve as that. But I think restaurants in particular and food memories are so rich with that and so important for that reason.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. And especially because we didn't really go out to dinner a lot when I was a kid. I think we did more as I got a bit older, and now I certainly do. I feel like my kids are super spoiled. But I mean, it was just a few and far between. And so I remember that I have a lot of those really strong memories. I even remember going to Tung Ting with another friend, you know, at some point there, and he was eating sushi because they also serve sushi, uh-huh. which is, you know, and I was like, what is that? and he introduced me to sushi there. So like a lot of those trail markers for sure.
Yeah, it's important. So, you know, talk to us a little bit more, Adam, about your kind of early family life. You had a loss at a very young age. And yeah, tell us about that.
My father passed away when I was four.
Wow.
And then my mother, actually met my father, my stepfather. I call him my stepfather, my father, so I'll try not to do that and confuse people. But my mother met my stepfather a year later at a widow and widower support group because he also lost his wife at the same time. And then they got married a couple of years later when I was seven. So that's actually when I moved to Centerport. Before that, I was in Holbrook on Long Island.
That's such a special thing when in a crisis, something wonderful can come out of it. So may we ask, how did your dad pass?
Yeah, so that's not interesting, but he came home one night and he keeled over. I was sleeping. He had a cerebral hemorrhage. Mm. And when they subsequently figured out that he had cancer that was undiagnosed, and my mother said that at least from what they told her, that it started as testicular cancer, which to me is, you know, particularly tragic because it's so treatable.
Right.
But now as a grown up, I'm kind of like, was it testicular? Like, how could you not have known? And,
right.
and how could your body have been so racked with cancer that, you know, you just keeled over one night? Because he sort of collapsed and went to the hospital and was in a coma and never woke up. And so it was like, there was no treatment. It was just, he was gone.
That's such a tragic sudden loss. Yeah.
Really tragic.
Yeah. So, I mean, especially, well, for, I was so young that there's only bits and pieces of it. I mean, I very distinctly remember that night not waking up in my own bed. I remember waking up, not knowing where I was. It turns out I was at a friend's house down the street because my mother was scrambling to, I don't know, get my father to the hospital. And my friend's grandmother, I think, came in and was like, it's okay, you're here, whatever. But yeah, I don't really remember that much from that period of time. I remember I didn't go to the funeral. I think my mom didn't want me to go to the funeral, but then she sat Shiva at our house. And I remember it was in the summer and like, family being all around. We had this above ground pool in the backyard and my cousins were like trying to keep me busy and take me swimming and stuff. But it was like the memories are sort of scant from being 4 years old. So yeah, I probably been processing that my entire life.
Of course. Well, it's such a wild age for that to happen. Yeah. Every age that you lose someone is so specific, you know, is difficult in a different way. But four, you're kind of at the point between consciousness and the point where you have memories and when you don't, right? Like, when do we really start, you know, I know we start making memories when we're very young, but the ones you hold on to, right? Like, they start coming in around five or six or something like that. So that's a very interesting age.
Yeah. In some ways, I'm sort of like, this is also weird to say, but I consider myself almost lucky in that sense, because, you know, I think that I know people who lost their parents when they were teenagers or in their 20s, or my stepfather, his children, right? Like, my stepbrothers and stepsister. My stepsister was 17 or 18 when her mother died, and they were incredibly close. And I can't even imagine, that seems, you know, way harder than what I went through, because to that point, like, I have some memories. I remember him teaching me how to swim and certain things like that, but it wasn't like, you know, or I think my own kids, I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. It's like, she's there,
yeah.
You know, like, for sure. she's basically a teenager. so yeah, I think it is a weird time, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like a twilight kind of thing.
Right. And it's like, yes, of course, when you lose someone, when you've had developed a whole relationship with them for decades, you know, it's extremely painful. But I think it's a different thing when I don't know, tell me how you feel about this, but not getting the opportunity to make those memories is hard in its own way. I would, like, the imagined reality, you know what I mean? The reality that never happened and stuff, like, it's...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was kind of always, like, grasping at straws, right? And I was, even at a young age, like, after that, as I got a little older and started to be able to read and things like that, I was deeply interested in death and the afterlife, because I was trying to figure it out and make sense, and reading books about it, and I think, especially as a little kid, you have these sort of visions, like, well, maybe he's not dead, like, maybe he's actually maybe he's out there somewhere, you know, and, like, as you get older, you're like, well, that's ridiculous, but
or is it?
You're 6-7 years old. I don't know.
What you're saying is, developmentally, we're at a certain stage, you know, in that preschool age. Is, you know, you're just trying to understand life, and you're right, you don't have that much of a memory. But, you know, the other thing about early loss is how the family adjusts to it, because it was a trauma. It happened suddenly, and it was, you know, in the night, it was such a serious change in your family's life. What do you remember how your mom was able to kind of restore, you know, equilibrium in the house? And
I honestly don't know. Like, she was so strong. My mom was such a strong person. Mm-hmm. And I think she just figured out a way to, like, power through it. Not only power through it, but she went back to school. So my mother was like, she went to undergrad for education stuff, but she didn't do that. She wasn't a teacher, and she just started a bunch of different jobs. Like, she worked at Newsweek and as an admin and different things. And then after my dad passed, she was working at a nursery school, but she went back to night school, got her master's in special education.
Amazing.
And then also just, like, started to try to put her life back together. They were also, like, from what I understand, they were, like, pretty broke. So she had, like, a mortgage to pay and a mouth to feed. And then, yes, she slowly started to, like, you know, socialize. Like, luckily, like, my aunt and my uncle, her brother and sister are great, and they were super close. So, like, good. That was really great that they were around and just very supportive of her. She had great friends. And then, yeah, she must have met my stepdad probably, like, you know, 12 to 18 months later, I would guess. Mm-hmm. And then that really was a supportive group. Like, they were all friends.
I love that.
I think there was, like dating within the group.
Right.
It was very
odd.
And then, like, I don't know, the two of them sort of settled into this relationship, and it worked out. Yeah. And they got married when I was 7. So it was, a couple of years later.
Was that hard for you to have a new person that was dad?
100%. In the beginning, it was, like, not smooth. And he's also, my stepfather is 15 years older than my mother. Mm-hmm. It was so cool, like, getting brothers and sisters, but they were already, like, they were in college. Mm-hmm. or my stepsister and I had, like, a tiny bit of overlap, but she was graduating the year I got married. And I think they were kind of like, what's going on here? Yeah. You know, like, met this woman that's 15 years younger than you and this kid, and like, what are you doing? You're 50. My mom was 35. And in the beginning for me, I think I was very like, this is not, he's not my dad.
Of course. Kind of
thing. So that took a while. And he's very, my stepfather, we're pretty close now. But you know, he's quite different than my mom. He's like very stoic. He's an electrical engineer, PhD, brilliant guy, you know, but he's like a, I always mix this up. He's like a left brain guy.
Right,
and like,
right, exactly.
My mom and I are like right brain people.
Yeah.
Yes.
So just very opposite in that way.
For sure.
You know, they always say that a family is like a mobile, and you know, you get this kind of balance, and all of a sudden one piece mm-hmm. of the mobile is yanked away and everything's in disorder
yeah.
and mm-hmm. out of equilibrium. And then in your case, you added a whole bunch of new pieces. So it must have taken some time to get it back balanced again.
That's an interesting metaphor.
That's certainly true, yeah.
Did your mom have a way of continuing the memory of your dad?
Yeah, I mean, she talked about him all the time, right? And luckily, I think my stepfather was okay with that and fine with that. And, like, she would tell me stories about him. And, you know, she had all these diaries from when she was a kid and, she would like not show me necessarily, but talk about things and her memories. Cause she met my father when he was like, when they were 18 or 19, they met at Weight Watchers.
That's cute.
And,
that's
yeah. And like, you know, not a lot, but like we would go to the cemetery, you know, here and there and see him. And, you know, so that was nice. So yeah, no, she did for sure. And like, she talked about him, not all the time, but like, but a good amount. So I felt that kind of connection.
Yeah. You were mentioning in kind of in our little pre-interview that your mom wasn't necessarily the greatest cook, but that the things she made were so deeply entrenched in your memory. And, you know, I was growing up, my mom, Bobby was a single mom for a while. Bobby is a fabulous cook and I learned to cook from her, but I really related to when you said that just about like the special, like little snacks and little things that are just like really good to you, you know, like, and you're particularly talking about ketchup, which we can relate to loving ketchup in our family because we are ketchup lovers.
My mom was a massive ketchup lover. I'm Jewish. My mom grew up in the Bronx.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, the end of Goodfellas, and he's like, I went to a place where it was egg noodles and ketchup.
Yes.
Like, that's my mom. It was like, she didn't learn about tomato sauce until she met my stepdad.
That's amazing.
And so, you know, she made an amazing meatloaf. She made an amazing tuna casserole. In the meatloaf, she put two hard-boiled eggs, which I thought was like really cool.
I love that. We used to do that at Brucey. That's like a very traditional way of making meatloaf in Italy. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did not know that because that's interesting. But then she also did this thing where she would make mashed potatoes with the meatloaf, and then you would mash up the meatloaf, the mashed potatoes, and ketchup.
Yes.
It was like that. It looked awful. It looked awful.
Love
it.
It
was delicious.
I'm completely on board for
that. And my stepdad was, you know, my stepdad was horrified. He was like, I'm not doing that. He ate the meatloaf. He ate the meatloaf, but he did not do like the mashing together. She made like tuna melts. Like, her version of a tuna melt was, she baked them, so she would make like tuna fish. I ate a lot of tuna fish as a kid.
Me too.
I still like tuna fish.
Same.
She made like tuna fish, and then she'd put it on a hamburger bun with Thousand Island dressing and a piece of American cheese, and wrap it up in tin foil, and then bake it in the oven.
Yes.
So they're like very fluffy.
Ooh.
And that was good. She made amazing matzo ball soup. So that was actually really good.
Yum.
And she made the matzo balls were like really dense, like really
they were
hard,
sinkers.
I like. They're sinkers.
Yeah.
But people now, anyone that would have them, like, ugh. But I love them like that. And then she was like a snacker. So she's not like the healthiest of eaters, my mom. But anything you could snack on, she loved, like chocolate and ice cream and all that stuff. And so she would always be giving me like all kinds of snacks. And the one I remember the most is probably the way she ate Oreo cookies and had me eat Oreo cookies was she would pour a glass of milk and she'd put in like five or six Oreos and you'd let them disintegrate and then you would mash it up and it would create like this layer where the top layer you would scoop out was the vanilla and you'd eat that with a spoon. You drink the chocolate milk in the middle and then the bottom layer was this like chocolate sludge that was just unbelievable.
I love that. I love that. That's so joyful. You know, it's funny. I was talking to someone earlier today about, I don't know, just like why we do things that we do and about like, life being hard, and it's kind of about these like little moments of joy and these little tiny things you can do. And that just really strikes me as just like, just a little way of capturing like a little bit of joy. Sometimes things are so hard and dark, and just like a couple, you know, you're in a like cave or something, and a couple little rays of light peek in, and that's like one of them. Just make something that's like fun and delicious. And you remember when you're doing something, when your mom was making like a Oreo milk, like I'm sure she wasn't thinking like someday my son will remember this and will like conjure this big memory. But it does. Right. You know what I mean? The loving gestures you do of just things that are so genuine and just like come so easily. That's why I'm always like on Christmas and holidays and stuff. You know, I like buying gifts and I like doing stuff like that. But it's actually like these little one-off like things we don't think so much about that we do on a daily basis that are like the big things, I think, that really stick with people that we love. You know,
you know, and I think we create them, like you said before, the light in the tunnel. But it's more like the light we create in the tunnel. You know, because there isn't always light in the tunnel. And then you create it out of some joy in your own heart, some love in your own heart.
Yeah. And it's just, it's interesting because I think a lot of times when people go through traumatic experiences and experience loss and are in intense grieving, it seems like the, you know, the goal is so far out of reach, right? Like the top of the mountain of like feeling happy or getting, you know, in some way getting over your grief, which is not a thing. Is so far away, but in reality, it's like, it's like small things. It's like, what can I do in a day, even if it is the smallest thing, even if it is a glass of squishy Oreos, you know what I mean? Like that will be nice. Yeah. And that's like a really sweet, it's a really sweet memory. And your mom sounded like she was amazing and a lot of fun.
She was. And it's funny that you say that. Cause like she was a very joyful person. I think anyone that knows my mother would say that about her. But she had a really tough life. I mean, she lost her parents when they were quite a bit younger. She had a really hard time just starting her own family, conceiving. She had miscarriages. She had a stillborn before she had me.
It's a lot.
And so like, I was always thinking, like, not as a kid, but when I got older, I was like, how are you, like, okay, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. There's something about her that there was a lot of joy that my mom had.
Mm-hmm. And you also had inherited grief in a way, because when our parents go through grief, we kind of inherit that. I don't know if it's in ourselves or just in our memory, but
It's
feel
real.
It.
It's called intergenerational trauma. Yeah, yep, exactly. It like actually right. is, it's been studied quite a bit. It's very intense. And it's interesting how sometimes certain people there's so much they're meant to endure in one lifetime and it feels so much greater. And, you know, I think that's, there's been books and novels and movies and poems and albums written about why this must be. And there, I don't know if there's an answer other than randomness, but it's a kind of at the end of the day boils down to how you find a way to cope with it. You know what I mean? Even in the smallest ways, because, you know, it's just in a way like the world doesn't care. You know what I mean? It's so cruel. Right. Like the world doesn't care. It's just about how you find a way to care, how you make it kind of good, you know, if you can.
It's how you cope, but it's also how the meaning that you make of it. There's a lot discussed now in grief about one of the aspects of grief is making meaning. And so it's making meaning out of the losses. It's making meaning out of your life. It's making meaning out of the instability of loss, because you feel very uncertain and insecure when we have loss. Like, what do we trust? You know, particularly as a kid loses that sense of trusting that when you wake up in the morning, everything's going to be the way it was yesterday. And when you have a loss like you did, Adam, it affects your sensibility of safety, wouldn't you say?
I think so. I think for sure. And now being a parent, you know, especially with my 8-year-old, you know, she asked me about death sometimes, or like, am I going to die? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's like such a hard conversation to have, because you don't lie. No, of course you're not going to die. Yeah. But also don't want to like be like, yes, you are. You're going to die. Yeah. It's going to be awful. Like, so, you know, and they're, you know, they've experienced a little bit of a loss in their, or, you know, a bit too. So like there's, it's hard. Yeah. You're sort of breaking them out of that, cocoon of safety. And that's, it's like, it's kind of tragic, you know, it has to happen, but it's hard to see it as a parent for sure. Mm-hmm.
Of course. It's really painful.
So when you told us a little bit about your life, it seems like you've had accumulative losses. You've had other losses as well.
Yeah. I lost a really good friend in my early 20s.
You were in an accident, right?
Suddenly in a car accident. Yeah. And And then my mother passed away 7 years ago from pancreatic cancer. And a really close, my mother's sister's husband, my uncle, passed away, I guess now it's 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, right before. I have a really hard time with like pandemic time now.
I know.
Like, yes. before the dark times. I think it was September of 2019, so like right before, you know, everything. So yeah, it's kind of stuck. It's like part of my life, I guess. I didn't have, like, all of my grandparents were either died before me, or my grandmother died when I was like 6 months old. Mm. So yeah, it's sort of like part of my life, I guess, in some way. Mm.
So what sense do you make of it? What do you think about, you know, I mean, it's a big question.
That's a really big question. Yeah. I don't know that I've made like total sense of it. I think one thing I struggle a lot with is that I should make sense of it, right? Like I should have a purpose. I felt like that a lot when I lost my friend, because I was in the car. He was driving, but I survived and he didn't, right?
Wow.
He was amazing. My friend Steve, he was like the best. Everyone loved him. And I thought for a long time, especially being, you know, in my early 20s, like, I need to live his life now, right? And
wow.
He was a musician. He was an amazing writer. And so I thought, like, I need to take this responsibility to not only live my life, but to live his life. Which is impossible, obviously. But I don't know. I think it's sort of, it's maybe what you were saying before, Zara. It's like finding, just trying to have some perspective and find like the little pockets of joy. Mm. Like I definitely have all the things that a neurotic New Yorker with my background would have, of anxiety and stress and all that. But I try to find the joy. I don't always succeed at it, but, mm-hmm. But I think that like, But you know, if anything, maybe it's just like I take from both my friend Steve. Actually, my friend Steve, my uncle Jerry, and my mom all had something in common, which is that they were like amazing, warm, loving people, and they were always like interested in meeting new people, doing new things, experiencing new things. So like, I take that away from all of them.
That's amazing. You know, I have it's funny. I was having the same conversation earlier today with the same person I mentioned before. I was talking about my own near-death accident, and they were asking me about Brucey, the restaurant that I used to own, and, you know, how...
Which I loved, by the way.
Thank you so much.
I miss it so much.
Thank you. Me too. And so we were talking about it, and she was asking, like, you know, you had no experience, how did you keep it going, how did you do it for that long, and blah, 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 how'd you make it what it was? And I was like, well, I felt like, because I almost died in this accident, and that's how I got the money to, like, open Brucey, that I just felt this like sense of like pressure. And then part of that is good, but like, I still feel that. And I can connect with you over like having survived an accident. I mean, thank goodness everybody survived the accident that I was in, but it was so intense. It's like a miracle that everyone survived. And I carry that with me even to this day. And sometimes it like really works in my favor. And sometimes it like really works against me. You know what I mean? Because sometimes I'm like, okay, like, I have to, like, really go for this because I know how fragile life is. I know how quickly it can all be over. But what I've realized is that not everybody thinks that way. So if you're in, like, a one-on-one with somebody who maybe doesn't, like, you know, have that same perspective. And we all know this, right? Like, in the back of our minds. But, like, I think when you experience it, it's, like, very much at the forefront. And I've found that if I'm sometimes dealing with someone who doesn't have that shared experience, they're like, whoa, like... You know what I mean? Like, hold on. Like,
yeah,
this
yeah.
doesn't, why does everything have to be so immediate? I'm like, because we could be dead. You know, like, come on, people.
That's true.
Yeah.
And not everyone has that perspective.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel like, I don't think it's a blessing.
No,
I wish that some of these things had not happened for sure. But, and the perspective doesn't, it's not always there. But
totally.
Like, I feel like I have to remind myself that life is short, and I get stressed about all the things about family and work and all that stuff, and
yeah.
I try to back myself out of it, but
yeah.
But it doesn't always, it's not I'm not always effective.
Well, yeah,
that's not effective.
You're a human. You know what I mean? Like, I feel the same way too. Like, I mean, I'm sitting here waxing about how, like, you know, life is so precious and I have the most grandiose sense of perspective ever, but I definitely don't either. And it is a practice, but it is something you can call on. And it's not something you would never wish for something like that to happen to you or for anyone to pass away. But it's like, I guess it's one of the only, you know, it's one of the good things, one of the positive things of trauma and grief is like you have an sure. I always think of it like you have another tool in your toolbox now, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so like
that's definitely true.
Yeah, like you have another skill or something and you don't necessarily want it, but when something else comes up you're like, oh great, like I have a screwdriver, I can probably
yeah.
get out of this like locked
it's something
room.
To remember, you know, most of those things that we forget we just have to try we remember when we forget.
Yeah,
that's really
yeah.
it. So you're right, we
yeah.
forget about the preciousness of our existence and how fragile it is. But,
yeah.
you know, from what you tell us, Adam, there were a lot of different traumas in your life, you know, starting with your mom and her traumas before and then with your dad's passing and your friend's passing and the accident. And did you find that there was an anxiety out of the trauma that has happened in your life?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think so. My mom, I mean, and I think, as you mentioned, like intergenerational trauma, right? Like, I think I'm very similar to my mom in a lot of ways. And I think she was, as I've mentioned, a very joyful person, friendly, happy, but she was also like a worrier, right? I think she worried a lot about me, right? Because I was, we built such a strong relationship and bond because I was her only child and she lost her husband when I was four, all that stuff. She worried about me all the time, right? She was really good about it. I mean, she wasn't overbearing. She let me do all the things I needed to do. But I know in the background she worried about it and I'm a worrier, right? You know, when my wife and family listen to this, like, yeah, that's true. It's a worrier. And I have a lot of anxiety and stress and I'm probably a little bit of a hypochondriac, all the things, right? So yes, sadly, those things have carried over to me, I would say.
All understandable. Have you found ways, what are some of the ways that you have found that help you cope with that?
Therapy. I've done therapy on and off over
mm-hmm.
the years. I saw a grief counselor after my friend passed away. It was incredibly helpful. And I've had a few therapists. I just started going back to therapy recently, which I was like looking for. I also have like a really bad back, not from the accident that I was in, but
mm-hmm.
just I have like herniated discs and all that
oh,
stuff.
No.
And so I do a lot of stuff for my body, right? I go to PT twice a week. I do acupuncture. I've done Rolfing. I've done yoga, I swim, all this stuff. And I've learned that there's also like a very much of a mind body connection. Like when I'm stressed, when I'm anxious, I actually, my body doesn't feel well.
Yeah.
Right. So I've sort of tried to realize that like my emotions have to be right for my body to feel right. Right. And so that was one of the reasons, I mean, that I actually really looked into going back to therapy because I was like, I wanted my body to feel better and
totally.
I need to like get this like proverbial like weight off of me. So like, you know, you have to lose weight, like physical weight, which I try to do, struggle with, but like getting better at, but then you have to lose the, like the emotional weight.
Exactly.
So I try to do that again, not like and alcohol, you know, that's helpful
yeah.
too. And other things like that, but like,
yeah.
But yeah, that's some of the, I find that like, you know, when I've been more focused and able to do like, you know, Iyengar yoga and stuff like that, like I don't really come from that place. Like I was never into like the whole like Eastern medicine thing as a child. There was like none of that. Right.
Right.
But as I've gotten older in life, I found that there's like real practical applications to that kind of stuff.
Totally.
New tools.
Yeah.
Agreed. So Adam, I want to know a bit more about your mom because you mentioned that you guys
sure.
had a really close relationship and I just, you know, I have a close relationship with my mom too. And, you know, I lost my dad and that was extremely painful
yeah.
and hard, but like I have like anticipatory grief, even thinking about like, you know, losing my mom. So I just want to, you know, I want to hear more about her. And can you just tell us a bit more about like what your relationship
yeah.
was like and losing her and
sure.
her diagnosis?
Well, her name is Marcia, Marcia Ann. And she was, I think, 30 when she had me. So it was always easy for me to remember like how old she was and how old I was. I just was able to add 30. But yeah, like I said, I mean, we were just like very close. She was so loving and like so open with that. Right. I'll try not to get too emotional, but like she was the kind of mom, like she did work, when I was younger. And then when she married my stepdad, she was able to, step back a little bit. So she was like all of the things that I did. Right. So like growing up, I played sports, I played soccer, I played lacrosse, I also tried wrestling and basketball, all the things. And like, she went to everything, right? And I was in plays and theater and chorus, and she went to everything, right? My dad went to a lot of it. My stepdad went to a lot of it too, actually. But as I mentioned, she was a worrier, right? And this was like, sort of one funny thing that I like to say, like she was, this was also pre, you know, iPhones or even like MapQuest. So when I had a game that was far away in high school, it was like Rocky Point or Stony Brook or something like that. She would do like a dry run that either the day of or the day before. She's like, oh, I drove out to Rocky Point today just to make sure I don't get lost, because she had a terrible sense of direction.
That's sweet.
And so like there's stuff like that. And she was incredibly close with, as I mentioned, her sister and her brother, my aunt and uncle. And she had a best friend, Sandy, who she saw all the time. And she was like on the phone every night with somebody. Like one of her friends, like she was just she was like social before pre-social media. She had like, you know, like tight connections, loose connections. And she was also the person, you know, and I kind of do this, but maybe not to her extent, but like if you were next to her at the aisle supermarket, like at the checkout counter, like she was talking.
I love.
She's like, oh, what's that? Like, what are you getting? You know? And like, she just would strike up conversation. She was so friendly. And like disarmingly so,
wow.
I think. And yeah, like I feel like any of my, because I'm luckily, I'm really grateful that like some of my best friends are my best friends from that time. Mm. Like my best friends are, a lot of them are still my friends from when I was growing up, and they're all like, yeah, your mom's, she was awesome.
Yeah.
She was Mrs. I, and like they loved hanging out, and also because she gave all of them a lot of snacks. They were like, you had the best snacks.
That's awesome.
So
that's
yeah.
Wonderful.
She sounds really amazing. And so she passed away 7 years ago. Yeah, of pancreatic cancer. Was
yeah.
it a long time
yeah.
from diagnosis to when she passed?
It was 15 months,
yeah.
I think. So for stage 4 pancreatic cancer, yes. Mm. You know, I know you've had some other guests on the show, and I've subsequently like met a lot of people who've lost people to pancreatic cancer. It's usually incredibly fast, right? It's like you by the time you find out, it's too late.
Yeah.
Right. Which is probably what also feeds into my hypochondria. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, she was diagnosed like maybe 10 years earlier with type 2 diabetes, which, can be a precursor to it.
Mm-hmm.
She had her gallbladder removed when she was younger. I learned that can also be a precursor to it. So she was, you know, fine with all those other things I mentioned. And then, yeah, I had been on a business trip, and she didn't mention it at all. And then I came back, and I talked to her on the phone. She's like, I want to let you know something. Like, I just haven't been feeling well. Like, I haven't been doing well. And like my back's been really hurting, and I've been like losing weight. I'm not hungry. And then lately I've gotten jaundiced. Right. So they think maybe I have like pancreatitis, or they don't know, whatever. And then she's like, I'm going for like some tests on Monday or Tuesday or something like that. And I remember my wife actually was pregnant with our oldest daughter at the time. We hadn't told them yet. And I remember the day really well, because we went for like one of the big scans or something like that in the city. And that's when we found out the sex. We found out it was a girl. And I remember, for whatever reason, knowing my mom was going to test and knowing it was serious, but I didn't think that it was cancer, but like I knew it was something big. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back to Long Island to be with them and figure it out. And, it was awful. Cause like on the way out there, actually I took the train, but my uncle was going out too, cause he was already out there. We were both going over to the hospital together, and my dad called me. He's like, are you coming? And I said, yeah. And he's like, are you alone? And I was like, no, I'm with Uncle Jeff. He's like, oh, okay. I don't think maybe you shouldn't be together. And I was like, what's going on? He's like, just get here, you know? And like, and that's when they sort of said like, yeah, we think this is pancreatic cancer. Mm. And then it was this like 2-day ordeal because they weren't sure. They could do a biopsy, whatever.
Of course.
Like, I think I kind of knew. I was like, okay, this is it. And I didn't know anything about pancreatic cancer at the time either. So
what a juxtaposition of your pregnancy, you know, your wife's having a baby and finding out it's a girl and finding out about your mom on the same day. So powerful.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And my dad, my stepdad, he's funny. He knew that my wife was pregnant because like we had all gone away as a family like 2 weeks earlier up to Boston where some of our cousins mm-hmm. live. And that, I don't know, like the next day he's like, when are you going to tell your mom that Kim's pregnant? And I was like, what are you talking about? You know? And he's like, I know she's pregnant. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, she didn't feel well last night. You're doing this. You're doing. And I was like, oh God. And I was like, wait, I can't talk to mom about it yet. Cause we need to go through, like, it's not time, you know? And so then when we got the diagnosis that day about the pancreatic cancer, my stepdad was like, you need to tell her, she needs some good news.
Aww.
So, I had this, and it's like sad, but there's a picture of her in the hospital cause she's holding the sonograms, but she's like yellow, you know, from the jaundice. Cause and so she was like, you're not great. And she was like really upset, but I was like, well, I have some good news.
Mm.
And we told her that night that we were pregnant. And then, and she, to her credit, she was like, she's like, I'm going to see that kid. Mm. So.
That's so cinematic. And it's so, it's an incredible juxtaposition of just like, God,
yeah.
Like. How life is so fucking weird.
It's
yeah.
so the yin
yeah.
and the yang, the bitter and the sweet, the heaven and the hell.
Yeah.
All I always talk about this. Andy Warhol has a photo, picture, painting, and it has heaven and hell just matched right up against each other, just
yeah.
smack. You know, these two things that are just so close and so far away, and just really
yeah.
something.
Yeah, and she did. She did. Not only did she see our daughter be born, she made it. She died. Like a week after her first birthday. So she made it all the way through that first year. And she was like, I can't even believe it now that I'm talking about it, that it was the same year. It doesn't feel real or the same time period, but like she loved it. She was like, it was a blessing that happened at the same time because she was so happy to be a grandmother,
mm.
you know?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry for the loss of your mom. And, you know, we have a very close family friend who's like a second mom to me who's been on the show, Kathy Bodily. She has had pancreatic cancer for a while. Yeah, a couple of years
oh,
now.
Really?
Yeah.
It's going over 2 years now. And she's planning on hanging around for a while, but we'll see.
That's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's and luckily there's like so much more that you can do now. We were getting into all these trials and like all these things and like it didn't work for her, but I'm hopeful that it's getting to a better place where you can even detect it earlier and stuff like that.
I understand that you're raising money for pancreatic cancer. How has that been?
Oh, well, I do. Every year, either my birthday. So my mother died. I'm going to get these dates wrong. I think January 5th, my birthday is January 11th. So it's like they're right by each other. So every year around that time, whether it's on the anniversary of her death or my birthday, I just will use like, you know, Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that and raise money for the two I tend to raise money for, PanCan and the Lustgarten Foundation, because I like Lustgarten because it's Long Island based also.
Right.
Which is nice. And you know, the fundraisers I was doing just ended. But over the years, it's been amazing. I mean, like probably raised like tens of thousands of dollars
oh, that's
for
awesome.
It, which is really nice.
Great.
And but honestly, it's a testament to her because like my point, the thing I always write in these posts is like, if you knew my mom, like just do it, you know, she'd appreciate that.
For sure.
And like people always step up. So that's really nice. But yeah, people are interested. They should definitely donate to those two organizations. They do a lot of amazing work.
That's incredible. So I mean, I'm curious to know about like after your mom passed, like you mentioned when your dad passed that you guys sat Shiva. Did you sit Shiva
mm-hmm.
for your mother as well?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
we did. We did it in a couple of locations actually because we did Shiva in three different locations. Mm-hmm. We did it at her house in Centerport, at my stepdad's house. We did it. And that was one day, the day of the funeral. We did it one or two days in my apartment in Brooklyn, and then we did it at 1 or 2 days in my aunt's apartment in the West Village, because there were so many different people that like knew her in different parts of her her life, and yeah, Shiva's a weird thing. It's incredibly helpful, right? In that like you people take care of you and you get to eat all this great food, and luckily I love smoked salmon and bagels and all that stuff.
Me too.
And, and in some ways it's like almost joyful because you get to just see all these people. Like there's a lot of people I saw that I had like hadn't seen in years, friends I hadn't seen in a while, or people that I didn't even know. They're like, oh, I saw you when you were a baby. Aww. But it also is, it just sort of delays, things,
yeah.
Right? Like there's so much going on and there's so, oh, we have to like figure out what we're going to do tomorrow and then we're going to move things around. And I remember that like it felt like the real you know process of grieving didn't start until that was all done.
Yeah.
So but it was but I can see how it's like a useful sort of like necessary thing to get you started on that path.
It's interesting. We talk a lot about Shiva, and we never really heard anybody say it quite like that. You know, it's people come to help care for the family and they take care of you. But the fact that it delays the process, you can compartmentalize in a way everything you have to do. And for a while, just rest, you know, is really a nice thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very interesting kind of tradition. Peter, actually, from Shelsky's came on one of our early episodes to talk about Shiva.
Deliver the Shiva.
Yeah, he's quite the expert.
Deliver the Shiva. That's good.
So
they must do a brisk business.
Yeah, right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But I'm pumping. Adam, kind of, you know, at the end, as we near towards the end of every episode, we like to ask everyone the same question, which is, if you could have given your younger self some advice and at whatever, and it's, you know, obviously you have so many kind of different points in your life where grief affected you and loss, but like whatever, wherever your mind goes, you know, stream of consciousness. But if you could have told your younger self something, giving your younger self a bit of advice, knowing what you know now, having been through this process, what would that be?
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot because I have listened to some of your shows. I'll actually give you very practical advice.
Okay.
And this is specific to my mother, and you'll only do this obviously if someone has a chronic long-term illness. Mm. But someone gave me this piece of advice, which I didn't quite follow. And I regret not following it. But a friend and former colleague of mine also had a parent that went through pancreatic cancer. And he called me in the beginning and he said, get a video, get a tape recorder and talk to your mom on it and like get as much down as you can. And I did that, but very late when she was like not doing well. And it was actually when I tried doing it like when she was on a lot of pain medication and she was like a little bit loopy. And I wish that I had done it earlier. I think that I had sort of in my head been like, that's this final thing that's accepting that you're going to die. And I don't want to do that. But I wish that I did because I think that would have been a really amazing gift, not only for me, but for my kids.
Yeah.
And like my kids, like I have done, I have a lot of traditions with them around her and I show them pictures and they amazingly do feel connected to her, which even my younger daughter who never met her, but it would be really great if I could sort of like pull up some videos of her talking about her childhood and her life and the things that she loved. And like, so yeah, I mean, you can't do that all the time, obviously, but, if you can, I would say get over this, you know, fact of like, look, maybe you do it and the person ultimately does survive and that's amazing. And the videos will still be
absolutely
great and meaningful.
Yep.
But like do that because I wish that I had done that quite a bit more.
That's wonderful. I wish actually in thinking about my dad too, who like died over kind of a longer period of time, but also of cancer. I wish I had done that too. I wish I had even thought of it. It's such a good idea. And it's funny because actually my dad used to come to all my sports things and all my plays and everything. And he would always take video of me. And before he died, he got them converted to DVD. So I got to watch some of them. And it's mostly like me clinging, like for instance, on a horse, trying to ride a horse, but being too gangly to get up on it. So I'm like dangling off the side of it, trying to get on and someone boosts me up or like clinging to the wall, trying to ice skate or like, you know, playing lacrosse and getting like hit in the face with a ball. So, but yeah, it would have been wonderful. That's a really great it's a really great thing. And it's important, actually, really important advice, because I have similar feelings of things I wished I did or missed out on, because it's so hard. And especially when in those kind of final times when you're really accepting it, it's so hard. You're like, you have so many other feelings other than just sadness. You know, I had a lot of anger when my dad was finally dying. I was so mad because he like didn't attend to like his bills. And I, for some reason, really focused on that. I don't know why. I mean, why do not now? Obviously, I was trying to avoid other feelings. But capturing someone for who they were in those times, it's brave. It's hard. That's very hard.
Because you want to hold on to every little morsel, every little sweet drop.
That's really nice.
Yeah, exactly.
We had a guest one time, Lisa Cole Rowland, and she spoke to us about, it was a beautiful episode. She spoke to us about losing her husband in a really tragic accident. And she said that after, it's going to make me sad to even say it, when after he passed, she went to the pillow and collected his hairs, like little hairs that she'd find and save them. You know what I mean? And like, it's so touching, but just finding the little kind of tokens of people, even when it's hard, even when it's really painful, it's so.
They become treasures. Sweet.
Yeah, it is actually.
At first, they're hard to think about and look at, but then they become treasures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we did one thing we did do, which I have to probably get new batteries for them, but we got these books that were like read-along children's books. Mm. So she like recorded reading, you know, like, oh, the places you'll go.
And that's wonderful.
That's amazing.
For my daughters.
That's so sweet.
And like, that's really cool. And like, that's not intended necessarily for you know, someone you're going to lose.
Yeah.
It's just like
right.
for grandparents to do for their kids, but it's really cool.
Yeah.
And, like, we did that and they liked that. But I sort of, I went through this whole process where like I saved every voicemail on my phone for my mom, right, to like some file. And I was like, I need these, you know, and then when you listen, she's like, hi, are you coming over? You know, it's like not, there's nothing special about them, but like, I was I need to make sure that I have her voice somewhere.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. I actually just the other day just called my dad's number because like I got good news and I was just like, I'm just going to call this.
Well, it's funny. My on my cell phone, when I call my stepdad, the number on the phone, I still keep it as mom.
Yeah.
And like, I won't change it.
Yeah. Right.
So.
Oh, the things we do.
Yeah. So also, as you know, as a listener, a question we ask everyone is if we were going to get to share a meal together, what would it be? And I just want to say, I don't want to forget to mention something very important is that, and we kind of touched on it in the beginning of the show. You said you're a lifelong fan of the Mediterranean Snack Bar, another fabulous Long Island institution, a Greek diner that is I think we all can agree the Greek diner of all diners. You said that your friend
because I love it. It's not open anymore, right? But where is it?
Oh yeah, they
changed
it to Perea, but
it's
exactly the same.
They changed owners. Okay, got it.
So, but you said that your friend was partial to Scorpios.
He was my friend Steve. My friend Steve passed away. I don't know why. He was Greek.
Yeah,
like,
he liked Scorpios back in the day too, but not anymore.
Yeah, he. I don't know why, but I think he likes Scorpios more for some reason, which was a point of contention. Mm. His mom made amazing spanakopita, makes amazing spanakopita. So that was always like a treat.
Yeah. Well, I know what I want to bring to the feast, if I can say first.
Yes,
this morning, I woke up at 7 o'clock in the morning and I made a giant pot of avoglomeno soup. I did. I made it because I have a friend who's having surgery next week and I wanted to make her something special. And I love to make that soup. So if it's okay, I'd like to bring that in honor of honor of Steve and honor of the Mediterranean Snack Bar and honor of my friend Heather.
That sounds great.
Well, I've had your avoglomeno soup. It's all right. It's amazing.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I'm sure yours is just as good.
She taught me how to make it.
Okay, I'm going to bring a giant Greek salad that would be like, you know, the one that I try to mimic from Mediterranean, which I don't know, theirs will always be better. But I think the key to their Greek salad that makes it so good, tons of herbs in the lettuce mix and also shaved carrots in the lettuce mix, which I've always thought carrots are cheesy to put into a salad, but it turns out I'm wrong. They're delicious.
It works.
They like sop up the dressing. They have like a nice texture. So I would bring a gigantic Greek salad from Mediterranean dressing on the side. And a bottle of ketchup in honor of your mom.
And a bottle of ketchup. Well, let's see. What would I bring? My mom, well, she loves seafood. I would say, I mean, she loved lobster, but I don't know if that really goes with this meal. But what about shrimp? She loved shrimp, amazing, too. So, like, any kind of, like, jumbo shrimp or Greek shrimp.
Ooh, arrigonata.
Yeah.
So, I'll do that.
Okay.
I'll bring that.
That sounds great. Oh, my gosh. I would love that.
We'll have some ouzo afterwards.
Yes. Ouzo. Adam, what a wonderful conversation. And, like, you know, we say this sometimes, but it's really so true that, like, it's such a heavy lift. It's an emotional heavy lift to come on, you know, and talk about this stuff. And it's not just, like, you know, a 45 minutes or an hour. It's, like, thinking about it and talking about it and then, you know, having it being stirred up afterwards. And it's just very generous. Like, really, really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about this. And
course, and I just appreciate you both having me, Zara and Bobby. It's amazing what you're doing, and I really appreciate it. And I prepare for this show, I've listened to many of them, and they're so wonderful, and, like, they're really helpful. So thank you.
It's been so wonderful to spend time with you and with Marcia and Steve and all the people who you love. And your daughters.
You.
You're a very strong human, and strong and kind, and just also very warm. And so, obviously,
you.
Your mom's best qualities have rubbed off on you.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
All right, Adam, thank you so much.
All right, thanks.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Thank you so much for joining us for Processing. We realize that sharing these types of deeply intimate stories on air is a very personal decision. We began this project as a way to connect our listeners through shared experiences and storytelling. We hope that Processing can be a platform for sharing, learning, and healing. We appreciate our guests' willingness to be vulnerable and value nothing more than making both our guests' and listeners' experiences with our show positive and progressive. If you're interested in being a guest on the show or writing in a listener letter, please email processing@heritageradionetwork.org. Please follow us at processing_podcast on Instagram. Processing is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.